Hey, hey, friendos. Welcome to The Road to Nowhere, a Marvel Champions LCG podcast. We focus on recapping Solo Champions League, but if you enjoy breaking down the finer details of a Marvel Champions matchup, then we have something for you. I'm your host, Joss Aru, and with us this week, longtime fave, Greg.
Hey, Joss. Good to be back. It's New Year's resolution time, so I'm vowing here on the podcast to say I'm only going to play Valkyrie in 2024.
I mean, the whole year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, whenever I have the chance, you know, Valk's always playing for me. I want people to hold my spear. That's really the thing I really like. Just hold my spear for a second while I hit you.
Are you going to be going to Con of Heroes?
You know what? It's a great question. I think I'm going to try to pull it off. For longtime listeners, know that last time I tried to go, I had tickets to go, and a car decided to to lay me out for a few months. But yeah, I'm excited to try again, and I'm not going to go for long walks for about 3 months before.
Okay. Well, before we get on to introducing our other guests, I'm just going to tell you one of my plans for the con is I'm going to bring Valkyrie in every aspect.
Okay.
So we might step on each other's toes.
You know what? For Con of Heroes, I'll acquiesce to you. But for everything else, it's all Valk.
Well, those won't be my only decks. So if we do play a game together, you are welcome to take Valkyrie and still stick to your New Year's resolution.
We should do a multiverse all Valk, all four Valkyries.
Okay. Five. We can do five.
Yeah, five. That's right.
Or six. Okay. I love it. We'll talk more. And then we have another guest. We have a new friend, but we're going to find out, longtime friend, our new friend, Dristan. Dristan, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invite to be on the podcast. I've been a listener ever since the very beginning. And it's kind of weird to sit here and like have to talk back on the podcast and not just listen.
Right. See, people will hear you laugh at Greg's jokes.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Let's be clear, but not all of them.
No, hey, not all jokes have to land. You just, if you keep throwing them out there, though, you know, you'll get some laughs.
This is the Wayne Gretzky of podcast attempts, at least.
So Dristan, we were just talking before we started. Share with the listeners your history with the league.
I've been in the league since season two. I think I joined because of a post on Board Game Geek, and I can't even remember, but it's been... It forced me to play the game more, and I guess it forces me to buy everything. So I have that built-in excuse that when something gets released, that I have to buy it now so I can stay up to date on Marvel Champions and Solo Champions League. So it's been a way that it's helped me play the game more, and it's my number one played game from here and probably until I'm done with the league, which I don't see stopping anytime soon.
I love it. Greg, do you see it as a similar excuse?
Totally. I mean, you know, I any minor excuse to buy more games, I will take. But yeah, like Dristan, it's head and shoulders over pretty much any game I play. I do that BG Stats app. I think we've shared, and Joss, actually, you've helped me like organize my stats a little bit better on that app. But the what's interesting is when you look at the games played, it's like Marvel Champions in real life, and then, you know, 40 games on Board Game Arena are my most popular games, and then other games with like family and friends after that. But yeah, the Champions is head and shoulders. I think I was, you know, about 170 plays, and that was a lower year for me than the prior year.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just about to hit 1,200 myself.
Whoa! In total or just last year?
Oh, no, in total. Jeez, not last year.
You have to get in like 10 a day, something crazy.
I both work and parent for a living, so yeah, I definitely don't quite have the time to hit that many.
Yeah, I bet I'm about half that. I'll have to look. Yeah, I think I'm in like the 500 or 600s in total.
We were having a curiosity question. I'm looking at other folks that were around in Season 2, because I pulled up the Season 2 Round 5 results. And familiar faces, Gondo, Ndilidi, T. Everly, Dristan, Forsooth, who's kind of in and out I think. That's about it, though.
Those are the OGs.
That's the season two vets.
Yeah, season one was clearly the beta season. Like, season two is the official start, it feels.
Right. Or at least according to how I decided to break that down.
Right.
Right. Let us check in on this round. So this was season 16, round 5, our final round. A few seasons ago, just as a reminder to listeners who aren't necessarily regular leaguers, or even folks who don't know some of this history, a few seasons ago, Innsmouth Bear changed it around from round 5 being throwing all the most difficult stuff at it to having a little mini boss at round 3 and then kind of a final boss at round 5. But the most difficult villain we will see will, or at least kind of overall setup, will be on standard, but in round 3, and then round 5 will again have a decent amount of difficulty, but not quite as heavy duty as what we saw with 3. So it kind of balances out nicely because we get to play some of the harder villains on standard, and that works out really well. So this was round 5.
I was just going to say, I really like this setup. Like, I think this round was challenging, but not overwhelmingly. You know, I definitely lost games in practice. But it wasn't like, you know, you're playing Ronin and just getting, you know, just eking out wins that one season when Ronin was our finale.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, speaking of, I mean, so Dristan, you've been around for evolution of a million different things. I don't know. How do you like this round 3 and round 5 system at this point?
So far, I like it. I mean, it's definitely fun to every once in a while have that, like, Ronin on expert. But, like, I can only take it once every couple years type of thing. So it'd be nice to have it once every once in a blue moon, but I definitely like the new standard of, like, let's try something challenging for round 3, like, give us one of the hardest villains on standard, and then, like, give us those kind of medium ones for a round 5. Because they're definitely can still be difficult, and we see in the results that there's, you know, it was a 100% win rate like we've had in some of the past, even some of the rounds this season where we had almost everybody winning. There's quite a few, like, protection and those things that ranked in the 80s. So I definitely like having the more difficult thing because it makes people deck build around it.
Yes, there's some weird optimal difficulty where there's not a ton of complaining, but people are enjoying the difficulty, right? And I think, you know, it's kind of like the nebulas of the world where it feels like there's just some inherent unfairness to the scenario that you're maybe trying to overcome versus some of the other difficult ones that don't have that. So it's both kind of the difficulty of it and kind of some of the perceived fairness issues, I think. Let's have a look. So we had Red Skull. Oh, Hydra in Space was the theme for this season for folks who haven't necessarily been following along. So we have Red Skull plus Galactic Artifacts plus Children of Thanos plus Ship Command. That's what we did. So we've got some Hydra in the form of Red Skull, and we've got some in space. And Ship Command has actually been a constant thread throughout all of the scenarios. As mentioned, we were on Expert. Our hero was Captain America. We could choose any of the 4 original aspects. No pool, even though that's supposed to be coming next season. And as we will see, all basic is a thing you can pick, and somebody did. And then we had an additional thing that Innsmouth Bear tried out this season was giving an optional thing that people could choose to do to get another benefit. And so this one was, we had some campaign elements, which we'll talk about in a little bit, from Rise of the Red Skull to get one of those Rise of the Red Skull condition upgrades on the improved side, which is how you would have it if you were actually playing through the campaign. And also we have some Galaxy's Most Wanted marketplace units. And at this point, the way everybody was accumulating them based on how they finished. So the higher they finished, the fewer of these they had. And if you just jumped in only for round 5, you would have 13 of these units. So I don't know. Dristan, how many units did you have? Do you remember?
I think I had somewhere in the neighborhood of 10. I only really focused on the one upgrade, though. I think I would just grab the one that was the one that that most everybody would use, where it takes it off the, I think it's the hyper thrusters, where it take one threat off the main scheme, yeah, and one threat off every other scheme. And then I just picked I usually would pick the one, I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's the one where it allows you to draw a card. And then
A
pick another
contingency plan?
one. Yeah, contingency plan.
Yeah.
I didn't have a whole lot to spend. And for this round, especially when you have all the side schemes, I think having that Hyper Thrusters out and getting that out early is kind of key to like getting ahead of everything.
Right. Greg, how about you?
Yeah, same. I think I had about 12, and I did the same thing as Dristan. I think all three of my I could afford three cards, and they were the two threat mitigator ones, the one that takes three threat off, and the one that the Hyper Thrusters that takes one off everything. And then I also got the cheap event that confuses both Cap and the Red Skull at the same time,
Right.
so get
Right.
more confuses in there. So yeah, just because that's the big takeaway when you practice. If you don't control threat here, we'll talk about Red Skull's side scheme deck. But if you don't control the side schemes, it can get off the rails pretty fast.
Greg, do you want to just jump right into like reminding us what are some of the kind of critical things that players needed to pay attention to when playing Red Skull here?
Red Skull is the king of the side scheme. He basically takes all the side schemes from his encounter set and all the other encounter sets you throw in there, the modulars, and it makes a separate side scheme deck. And then every turn in phase one of the villain phase, you flip another one over. So you're basically always getting a side scheme. So you have to be constantly trying to clear them, because when he attacks, he actually attacks for plus one for every side scheme that's out, and one is going to be flipped up right before he attacks anyway. So he's always going to have that one. But if you haven't cleared the other ones before, he can start, swinging for, instead of two and three, he'll swing for obviously a lot more. So it's yeah, the key here, and especially because we were playing, I mean, Captain America is actually a pretty good threat hero, because you can discard a card and basically he thwarts for two, so you could knock off four a turn. But if you weren't playing Justice, you had to get a little creative about how to mitigate that. And yeah, like I think the marketplace cards were a perfect place to try to find that threat mitigation.
Right. And we've seen some folks do some clever stuff. I remember Jarrett in one of the earlier rounds, I think maybe it was purposefully taking advantage of getting more wild resources into the deck. Or I guess lots of us were because we were playing Nova. But there's kind of some other clever things you could do through this, not just take advantage of what the actual effects of the cards were too.
Yeah.
Keep you what else do we need to know?
Well, so in term, it's interesting because he has two main schemes, and they're actually fairly easy to not lose. But his first main scheme is eight, and he schemes for three. So flipping is actually pretty precarious if you want to keep that kind of avoid that penalty for going to off that first main scheme. So yeah, also trying to figure out how not to flip, or how to have confuses or those kind of things when you need to flip. Is a challenge, because again, he hits so hard, and a lot of his encounter cards are additional activations. So you can actually die pretty quickly if you don't have either chump blockers or a way to kind of keep your health or damage mitigation down. So yeah, you're always juggling all those things. The interesting dynamic of this turn, I won't go through all of his side schemes, but basically his side schemes in his encounter set, there's about three of them that actually give you kind of a perk for clearing them. So they're not like all that bad, because they're not terrible in solo in terms of the threat threshold. But you have like Prison Cams gives you a free ally, which is actually an amazing one, especially if you have some beefy, like I played leadership this round, so I had some beefy ones in there. I really liked when that one came up. Or Sentry of the Past lets you shuffle three of your cards into your deck, which especially if your deck is getting low, is awesome. It just allows you to basically curate what your next hand is going to be. But what was the bitter part of this round is there's a lot of side schemes in the modulars here too, so it kind of diluted getting to those good side schemes in the Red Skull set. So it's that yin and yang of these actually weren't that tough of modulars, I thought, but they actually, again, took you away from that perk that sometimes the Red Skull side schemes give you.
Right, and I mean similarly, the Galactic Artifacts also has some things that are beneficial to clear, right? They can, but there was also some other nasty ones, so it was a thing that could be pretty swingy depending on which side schemes you ended up actually seeing.
And then also because, I mean, we'll get to Galactic Artifacts, but the threat threshold for the Red Skull ones are usually in that kind of 2 to 3 range. So very doable to clear it, to keep it, you know, keep clearing each turn. But when you get those like 5 threshold ones, it becomes challenging to kind of knock them off yourself if you haven't built your board up with other stuff. The only thing that just in terms of his like rest of his encounter cards, there's a couple that I think are just really punishing. He has 2 Red Skull right hook cards, which add retaliate, which obviously are just really annoying, and you have to spend a lot of resources to clear them. I also have a beef in that he has 2 cards that are Red Skull's right hook. And guys, he should have a left hook card and a right hook card. Why are we just trying to save ink here? Like, he's got 2 hands. But those cards are really annoying. And then also, he has infinite power, which gives him a tough and an activation. So either a scheme or an attack, depending on what side you're on. So those really are the ones I like to see the least. But then there's a couple that, if you aren't on top of your side schemes, really punish you. So like, Spreading Lies puts 2 on every scheme in play. And like some practice games, I had like 3 out, and it just like, okay, I think I've died now because there's no way I can clear these. And it just going to start to snowball from here. And then Bitter Rival, if you're trying to do like a leadership deck, like I was playing, sometimes if you haven't gotten on top of them, they will exhaust pretty much your entire bench of allies because it exhausts a character for every scheme in play.
Yuck.
Yeah, so those are the real bad ones. There's other ones that are actually not awful. He has 3 minions, which are these Hydra Exo soldiers. They have tough, and they hit for 2/2. But again, depending on what kind of thing you're playing, like they're annoying, but they're not necessarily, you know. It didn't feel like the combination of all the cards here had a ton of minions. I wasn't feeling like they were coming out, you know, as regularly as some of the other encounters were. Yeah, and so, I mean, again, there's a few others here, but I think those are the ones I wanted to call out because I feel like, especially when either Infinite Power or the right hook was, like, it felt like those were the cards I was trying to anticipate because that's when I was usually dying when I was practicing. I was usually getting hit too much or I had that snowball effect of the side schemes.
You need a new practice strategy, Greg. Die less.
Die less. But you know, if anything, if the Tom Cruise movie Live, Die, Repeat, and I'm using the revised title, not the original title, of course.
Yeah.
It's not as anything. It's like you get stronger the more you die. So I think I'm doing great.
Right. And all the roguelikes have also taught you that as well.
That's right. I've played Hades. I've played Slay the Spire. You have to die a lot in those games.
Yeah, that's how you advance. Dristan, do you want to give us a bit of an overview of Galactic Artifacts? So we already kind of brought it up, but a little more.
Yeah, I thought with like it was really well planned out to have these Galactic Artifacts in here because it makes that side scheme deck not as bad as it would be if you were to add in some other modulars, because it seems like all these ones with Galactic Artifacts, the side schemes that go in there actually are going to help you out a lot more than they're going to hurt you, especially if you can clear them at the turn that they come up. So you have like 5 attachments, 3 that go on the enemy and 2 that go on yourself. And I would say the 2 that go on your hero are actually probably more what I was looking out for, like hoping those ones would not come up as often as some of the other attachments. You know, the Cloak of Hercules, I just kind of, well, he has 3 more attack now. I hope that I have an ally out where I can just let the ally chump block that. But the different ones that had like every time that you defeat it, you're getting something as a result of it. I was actually hoping to see those ones almost everyone, and I played Justice, so I felt like it was always to my benefit to have any of those side schemes appear over any of the other ones. There were the couple ones that Greg mentioned earlier where you get to like fish for an ally, or you get to add some stuff to your deck. But I would much rather see those Galactic Artifact side schemes come up over anything else.
Yeah, for sure. Especially in Justice, where you could really tune your deck to be able to deal with 5 threat well.
Yeah, and it was, even if you had to spend the turn where you're thwarting twice with Cap, it still made it pretty easy to get rid of those side schemes in Justice. And we'll talk about it a little bit later. I think I over overtuned my deck to anticipate for this. I think I put way too many Thwart stuff in there, anticipating that I'm going to need a lot more than I really did. And I waited till last week to really get into testing my deck and running my game. So I think if I had tested a lot earlier, I would have taken some of that stuff out, because it really wasn't. Once you take Justice and take just a few cards for this scenario, I think you really didn't need a whole lot of those thwarting events.
Right.
Especially if you got those market cards, because once those were out, you know, they just kind of passively helped pretty much get rid of all those side schemes. Not always, but made it much easier to clear him.
Well, it depends, because in Justice, you may not have chosen the thwarting ones, but other folks for sure.
Yeah.
And once you get those hyper thrusters out, you really don't even need the upgrade, the heroic intuition to add that thwarting to your hero. It's already kind of built in with those hyper thrusters.
Right. Speaking of hitting the 5 threshold, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Beauty. Greg, so do you want to tell us a little bit about the Children of Thanos modular?
Yeah, this is a small little 5-card module. It's basically Thanos' kids. And so Red Skull, in my head canon, just like called up Thanos and said, you know, I have this fight with Cap coming up. Can you send the boys over? So Corvus, Glaive, Proxima Midnight, and Ebony Maw came over. And they're not chump minions. You know, they have, you know, they hit for a decent amount. Corvus hits is a 2/2 with Retaliate 1. Proxima Midnight is a 1/3 with Piercing. If you haven't quite built up your attack yet, they may be a bit of a challenge. But most of the time, if they came later in the game, I was built up usually enough, I was able to take care of them. But both of those boost icons were actually worse than actually coming out as minions, I thought, because they made you discard a support or an ally. Right. And especially if you had only a beefy ally out, that was really bad. And then Ebony Maw has Villainous, so he got a boost icon with his scheme or attack. So he was a little more challenging if you didn't deal with him right away, because he was also 6 health. He usually took a couple different swipes to get him out there. Because there wasn't a ton of minions, this added a few more minions in addition to the 3 that were in the Red Skull set. So occasionally you had to deal with a minion, but it wasn't as, you know, overwhelming as like a Zola. And then 2 more side schemes, the Tribute, which is like more of an annoyance because basically it was only 2 threats, so really easy to clear, but it added in a counter card. So you only like to see that one if you were about to win. If you're about to win, it was great. But right, otherwise, right. It was annoying because there's a lot of card draw, like in counter card things that happen. I think Red Skull starts with 1 face down, and then when you go to the third version of him, he also starts him. So there are a lot of rounds when you're getting two or more of those face down cards.
Yeah, you don't mind seeing a Hydra Soldier on the final turn.
Exactly.
You know, in life, well, my favorite minion in the game, you don't mind seeing him on the final turn.
Yeah.
I think I added Vivian in just to deal with that Tribute side scheme. I didn't have to see her. I didn't have to see that extra encounter card if it came up at just the right time.
Right. And with Justice or Leadership, you have a way to potentially kind of fish Vivian out. She doesn't have to be in your hand at the right time necessarily. So you even have more opportunity to take advantage of that. As mentioned, we had Ship Command, we had it every single round, so this is the one that comes with the Milano, which is an extra resource. Most of the treacheries are, you know, exhaust the Milano or do another thing. And then there's a kind of brutal environment card, and other than that, it can kind of sometimes a little bit tedious, but, you know, there's also a side scheme in there that ends up back up in the deck. So we have seen this thing every single time. It was fun to be able to get up and running so quickly thanks to the Milano and have kind of all that flexibility. And I think lots of us would probably be happy to not play with this modular for a little while. I don't know how many games I played in total this season, you know, probably like 60 to 80 or something like that, games with Ship Command.
I think it's my most played modular because so many require it. And then, this season, all the tests, you know, pretty much all 5 rounds had it. So, yeah, I think it's by far my most played modular. And it's, again, it's a pretty easy one, and it's kind of a nice one given that, you know, like you said, you get to start with with a minor build already in place.
When it's paired without Galaxy's Most Wanted villains, it makes it a little easier to deal with all the extra environment that it has, and the treacheries that come with it. So it doesn't feel as bad to exhaust the Milano to just deal with one of those treachery cards.
Right. And then, I mean, the flip side is we're not taking advantage of the fact that the Milano can help us with threat control in the Galaxy's Most Wanted scenarios. So it's a little different here.
Yep.
Okay. So the other thing I mentioned at the start was that we had a couple extra cards that we could take on to get an improved Rise of the Red Skull condition upgrade. So those are things like, I have the thwart one here. You get 2 hit points, you get an extra thwart. After you defeat a side scheme, you exhaust the card and draw a card. So there you're going to get some card advantage, often for things you're typically doing every single turn. And in exchange, you have to put 2 obligations into your player deck, not the encounter deck, but directly into your player deck. And so they are Martial Law, which is your hand size is reduced by 1, and then Alter Ego Action, deal yourself an encounter card and spend a lightning resource to discard this card, and then Zola's Algorithm, which has an acceleration counter or token and or icon. Alter Ego Action, exhaust your Alter Ego and spend a mental resource, discard this card. And not a lot of people did this, but you know, again, if it is a thing you're going to be doing every turn, especially if it's something like thwarting or something like that, I can definitely see looking at the trade-off of Martial Law reducing your hand size by 1, but the upgrade effectively giving you an extra card almost every turn, as you know, maybe you don't even need to bother clearing that thing when it comes out. Huh. I never even tried it either.
I totally blanked looking at them, and so in my head it was just going to be like hit points and a +1, you know, probably thwart or you know, attack or those things, and I forgot that there were other responses on the improved side. So that could have been interesting.
Now that you've like walked us through it, it kind of makes me feel like I should have definitely given it a shot in a couple of the test games, because going justice, that would have given me, you know, every turn would probably, once I get Skilled Investigator out, two cards every turn.
Right. Well, we got a bunch of fools hosting the show this week. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I got a big one coming up. My fool. my fool of the week.
Dristan, you want to tell us about your actual round? How did it go? And maybe about your deck a little bit.
Yeah, I ended up going with Justice because I thought we're going to see side schemes constantly throughout this. So might as well get, like, once I get that Skilled Investigator down, why not get an extra card every turn? And thought it would be perfect. So I put 2 of those in my deck. I went with 50-card deck just because I want to see as few extra encounter cards as possible. Just want to make sure I clear side schemes every turn, get that Hyper Thruster out, take care of those side screams, chump block. But then Shadows of the Past decided to show up in 2 of my first 3 games. So
as it does.
Game 1 was a turn 1 Shadows, and game 2 is a turn 3 Shadows. So that kind of slowed me down a little bit. But it wasn't actually, I don't think it was ever that bad. I don't think I ever really got into trouble with any of the, with Red Skull at all with my 3 games. I think I waited, and this is something I do sometimes, and when I actually build my own deck, is I kind of prioritize one thing and don't actually start to try to win the game until I think I have complete control of the board. I think with more testing, I probably would have taken out multitasking because I used it once in all 3 games and just never felt the need for it. We'll look at some other decks later where they definitely added some other cards. I'm like, yeah, that probably would have been a lot better. Upside the Head really allowed you to flip down, giving you a very easy way to confuse Red Skull. I found, like, even with the encounter card that you were talking about earlier, the really, really bad one, Infinite Power, to make sure that I could use Upside the Head, I would just let Cap take that, sometimes block with it, especially when you get the shield out and you got that Retaliate. It pings that tough off really easily. And that Upside the Head would let you flip down really easily. Then you can get Steve's Apartment out. You're almost, it felt like not quite as bad as Nova in terms of drawing cards, but I felt like I was always drawing cards with Cap this round.
Yeah, exciting that you did a 50-card deck. Love it.
Yeah, I definitely, I don't know. I didn't want to see more than one encounter card from Red Skull because he did have some of those ones that I didn't. I definitely didn't want to see something like an infinite power twice in one turn. So, but my turns went long enough that I think the 50 cards really didn't matter that much because I end up getting an extra encounter card from decking out anyways. I think in all three of my games. So my plan again went out the window.
Isn't that the way it works?
Or you can be like me and be so slow with a 40-card deck that you get two. So I think still you are better off with the 50.
Wow. Greg, do you want to tell us about yours?
Sure. And by the way, I don't want to spoil the awards coming up, but the main other reason to go for the 50-card deck is to go for the Curtis Jackson Award that I'm
Oh,
not going to
yeah.
spoil if Tristan won that or not, but that's definitely the reason to go for 50 is the Joss
Yeah.
Award.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? In this very specific one, those obligations that get shuffled into your deck, if you are able to do it faster, there's less of a chance they'll show up.
Yeah.
But in practice, it doesn't seem like that would have worked for this very specific round.
Yep. Yeah, so I did leadership. I was basically when I was trying to do some more trickier builds of doing like maybe buffing a Goliath or a Giant Man and maybe trying to do a minor Voltron thing, but I felt like I was trying to basically be too tricky and I just kept either having games that took forever or games where a couple attacks in a row did me in, or again the side schemes went out the door. And again, because I'm a roguelike player, that's how I play. So I basically just said, like, let's just do meat and potatoes this round. Let's do a lot of chump blocking. Let's try to mitigate threat with those market cards that we talked about. So the idea was I was just trying to mulligan hard for those market cards. And then kind of if I wasn't getting them in my initial hands, tread water enough with threat until I got them in place and use this. I just had a ton of allies, like a leadership deck probably does. And three of them were kind of bigger, beefier ones, but the other ones were either ones that gave you a card draw or just kind of cheap chump blocker. And so yeah, just trying to, basically tread water until you were built up enough with that and the caps like economy cards that you could start to like actually lean into the bigger allies like the Goliath and Giant Mans and Power Mans and caps, big swing cards, the one that does 8 damage and stuns. That's the one. Like, it's hard to get those early because like I'm not ready for you yet. But the biggest I am dumb moment was I think I hadn't started my games yet, and someone said that, hey, Mission Leader works really great this round because Cap is a soldier, and Mission Leader is a new card from the Cable set that basically let you I think draw a card every time you cleared a side scheme. So it was just like
Yeah.
that upgrade. And it seemed like such a natural if you were playing leadership. And I saw that post and I go, that's a great idea. Then I forgot that post and played my games and then saw it again and said that would have been great to have in my deck. So yeah, I ended up like with clean boards, but it was longer games. I'm not a speedy player. I tend to like I just always default to kind of build strategies. So that's not a great SEL strategy, but it's sort of how I like to play. So it certainly was the right call, I think, this round, just so I didn't like actually get a loss.
How many copies of Mission Leader would you have put in had you chosen to put it in?
Probably two. It
Yeah.
felt like it was good enough you wanted it early, and it probably wasn't worth three, but the only one I did three, I did two Mighty Avengers because most of my allies were Avengers, and that's a really great card if you can get that down early. Your allies are just so much more effective with it. That's the one that buffs all your allies with one Thwart, one attack if they're all Avengers.
Yeah, agreed. Okay. Love it. As I often do if I get choice of aspect, I play Justice. Like Dristan did kind of lots of the same overall things. I upside the head, lots of opportunities for turn the tide, so I brought that in. I was kind of relying on Cap to do, at least finishing off the things and clear the area. A little bit of main scheme protection in terms of counterintelligence one and under surveillance. So just kind of playing a bit of a safe conservative deck. But I went for 40 cards instead of 50. And I didn't bring any of the thwart upgrades from or cards from Galaxy Most Wanted. I just went for the damage ones because I found that's kind of where I needed things. In hindsight, that might not have been the coolest idea ever, but that's what I did. And then what happened is in game one, I got the Vandarian Power Wand, which is a thing that has the extra card icon, which I always forget what it's called.
Hazard.
Hazard.
Had the hazard icon, and to get rid of it, you have to spend three energy resources, and I just struggled to kind of line that up. So I got stuck behind this thing for way too long and spent kind of the whole game just trying to get back on top of it. And at some point, which was turn 11, I finally bailed on trying to get ahead of it, and I had 13 threat left on the board. Everything else was in good shape, but I just couldn't deal with those side schemes because they just kept on mounting. So that was a crappy start. And then games two and three went more according to plan. I was trying to play the kind of typical justice flip back and forth every turn, as Tristan mentioned. You know, when you've got Cap's apartment, it just feels like free money. So just going back and forth, and you had a fairly easy 5-turn win for game two. And then game three, I also had a turn one shadows, and then but I managed to get a 6-turn win out of that thing, which really surprised me. And I was even down to 2 health pretty early in the game and managed to end it with, you know, 14 or some perfect score type of number. So it was, yeah, a bit disappointing to kind of start off a little tough, but it, you know, ended up being okay. Fun though. I had fun. Did you two have fun?
No, I had a great time. I was going to say that Power Wand is my maybe it's one of my least favorite cards to ever see because it's so hard to clear. Especially this round, there's not a lot of minions, so it always gets attached to Red Skull. So it's not like you can kill the minion to get rid of it.
Right.
And yeah, it's just I remember I used to always watch the Team Covenant streams of playing champions, and they used to call this the Shake Weight because it looks
Right.
just like a Shake Weight.
Yeah.
My cursing of the Shake Weight was often when I would play with this modular.
What about you, Dristan? Did you have fun this round?
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. It's not like one of those ones where we get to round five and it feels like we're even some of the longer games that I had didn't feel like a slog. It felt like I was always trying to do something to improve, and they kept throwing just enough at me to make it last a little bit longer. I think recently I've started to go more of the two-handed solo just to kind of build up a little more, because like you guys have mentioned, I like the games where you got to build up a little bit before you can take down the villain. That's kind of what I've started to do with some of my solo Champions Leagues games, is just make sure that I get built up, and then just over the next 2 or 3 rounds, just knock them all the way down to zero, maybe
Right.
even from stage 2 to 3.
Often a very sound strategy, and because there's a lot of villains that have a bunch of punishment, like encounter cards, when you do go from two to three, there's some extra incentive to do that sort of strategy. All right, shall we look at overall results?
Let's
Yes.
do it.
In first was Aggression with an overall average approval rating of 101.9. And a win rate of 97, so this was the highest win rate of all. Leadership was second, which is 100.9, but a win rate of 93%. So lots more losses, but you know, it looks like a little faster than Aggression, which is actually a bit surprising. But maybe that's in part because of the losses. That all gets factored in. Justice had a win rate of 91% and was a few approval rating points behind those. Protection, almost 10 ahead of the leaders and an 85% win rate. And then one brave soul chose basic and lost 2 out of the 3 games. This is Blaze 241. So at a 33% win rate and approval rating of 57.9. So that kind of gives you a sense of what sort of approval rating winning 1 out of 3 games actually gives you. And the popularity of the aspects were leadership tops at 34, justice second at 28, aggression next at 19, protection at 17, and then, like I said, the one basic.
I was just gonna say, basic's tough because there's so much synergy if you're a guardian or a web warrior for basic.
Yeah.
Yeah, just have a lot of cards and just make all basic not feel that bad or punishing. But just with Avengers, there's just not any synergy really there. You're just dealing with basically worse cards that the aspects give you.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, Tristan, anything jump out at you?
I mean, I definitely would have thought that leadership and justice would have been the top with, especially when you look at the aggression was able to have. I mean, they were a little bit lower in the scheme score than leadership, but you know, I definitely would have put probably for, like the whole reason why I chose justice this run. I thought everybody would be choosing justice, and it was
Right.
kind of surprising to me to see the aggression at the top this round.
Well, those marketplace thwart cards really just do a lot of work, hey?
Yeah, and I wonder because I didn't take a ton of advantage of, you know, the trickier leadership cards. I just basically used it for a lot of the Avengers allies. You know, I had a few in there, but if you're doing the same kind of strategy where you're just loading up a lot of, you know, chump blockers and aggression, it frees up all your events to, you know, swing pretty hard when you want to. So yeah, maybe that's a good strategy. You have marketplace for thwart. You have allies for protection and some damage, and then yeah, you just swing away when you're ready.
Well, and what we'll see when we're looking at some of the decks is the aggression players did tend to play quite a bit of gray allies, which tend to be higher thwarter ones than the aggression ones, and so they actually had access to a decent amount of thwart through that as well.
Nice.
And then I just wanted to have a quick laugh at myself, so I think I won my first Skull Infiltrator award because I got the lowest scoring victory on my awesome 11 turn.
Shake weight.
13 threat one. So, but not only did I win that, but I didn't win Agent of Shield as well, but UNC Dave got Agent of Shield at 5 turns with 14 heroes HP. I actually had a 5 turn one with 18 HP, but because of the way the XP balancing works for the different aspects, that still wasn't a higher score than what UNC Dave got, but I got kind of statistically the same type of round as Agent of Shield, so I managed to effectively get both Skull Infiltrator and Agent of Shield in the same round. That's pretty good, right?
It's very good. I
Yeah.
love it. You're always guaranteeing the win, but you may win sloppy or you may win pristine. Like
Okay.
that's the variance, right?
Okay. Good. I'm glad people are proud of me. I was proud of myself.
I'm very proud.
And that not many people are going to be able to accomplish in one round.
No, that's more of a like different rounds in the same season type of activity. But thankfully, I didn't also get any of the other ones, which are, highest and lowest performing losses. That would have been sad. So let's have a look at the decks, and we'll just kind of start in the regular order of how the different aspects perform. So top was Kikita Jamie, who I think just dropped back in for the final game of the season and had a deck brawl outside the party at the Triskelion. And this was one that had 13 allies with three meditations. We see lots of the aggression folks went with toe-to-toe, throwing a ton of allies out and then having something to throw in front for toe-to-toe, targeting screen and hyper thrusters. So those are the thwarting ones, and then no Rise of the Red Skull upgrades were taken there. Zero Sade had kind of a 12 ally deck, so we're seeing lots of allies in all these things. And then in third was my alliance mate Astrodar, who had a deck called Aggression Events, which you as you might imagine has a bunch of events. But of course, this was an Astrodar deck, so had three press the advantage, three toe to toes, and then Psylocke as the final red card. So it was, like I mentioned, lots of gray allies. And, this is going to be the second time this season, never having won it before, the second time this season, Astrodar wins the pre-memorial award for fewest aspect cards in an aspect deck.
Yep. I think I've been on the record of just knowing this should be more an honorary award, not a
Well,
pre-memorial award, because I
I
feel like
know.
we're just celebrating fate,
I'm aware. But he's such a kind, gentle human that, fate's never going to try to take him out. He's fine.
That's right. That's right. And again, let's do another plug for his blog. His blog is super good. It's
Oh
one of the
yeah.
best reads on the Discord.
Alter Ego Chronicle. And he also finished at the quickest of all the podium finishers of 5.7 turns average. So he's also the winner of the If Only Quicksilver Actually Played This Fast deck. Love it. And there's even a plasma pistol in there. How fun's that? To And why would somebody include a plasma pistol in this round?
I don't know.
Because there's a lot of Tufts that show up on Red Skull.
Yes.
Yeah, just pings it off. But and then the exo soldiers that come in and the sleeper, there's quite a bit of tough.
Yeah, and the one of the, his boost cards that activate him again give him a tough and activation. And then I think, yeah, a lot of the boost effects also add tough. So yeah, it's a great call.
Right. And then the other benefit for a plasma pistol is that it is not an attack. So a lot of those things that were mentioned also could have retaliate. So that helps you get rid of the tough without also having to deal with retaliate. Leadership, we have finishing at the top from flight one is UNC Dave. Number two was Chuchunas coming out of flight two. And then third was kind of the season winner in the end, Jarrett, who is also a friend of the pod with a Captain America doesn't need a shield deck. And he, like you, Dristan, brought a 50 card behemoth and brought a deck that did a lot of the same stuff that Greg was trying to do, right, Greg?
Yeah, it looks really similar. I mean, he's got over 10 allies like I did, and he did do some, like, at least did some, like, make the calls and strengthen numbers, which seems like are good cards. I think I cut them just because I was trying to keep it to 40. But I'm looking at the leadership winner list. I don't see myself, right? I'm not on that list. So yeah, I think Jared probably did the best here by bringing those cards in.
What else do you think is in this deck that you didn't include that you're looking at it and saying, oh, that might have been really wise for me to try that?
I mean, I'm still going back to, I don't think he had, well, I forget, oh, Mission Leader. He had one copy of Mission Leader, yeah. I mean, Mission Leader is the big one, but my early versions of it, I think I was doing the more like, you know, strength in numbers, which gives you like card draw for having a lot of allies out. But I think what I was noticing as I was just killing my allies with chump blocking too quickly to really get a lot of value out of it. And because I had so many allies, I didn't really feel like I needed to make the call because I kind of always had an ally in my hand when I needed it.
Right. Jared even went with three United We Stands, which is one that people might not have at the top of their brain. It's a zero cost event and play only if your identity has the Avenger trait. Heal one damage for up to X friendly characters where X is equal to the villain stage number. So that's a way to just to get a little extra activation out of a bunch of allies potentially.
He has that write up in his deck where he's basically trying to get Avengers Assemble onto Black Panther and then use that at the most opportune time to kind of rush down Red Skull at the very end.
That, by the way, ploy, the Avengers Assemble Black Panther trick, was an early Joss recommendation for me when we were playing the Easy Goblin one.
Risky Business.
Risky Business, where you could just sit on Norman forever, and then you just build and put all the beefiest Avengers allies, and then you Avengers Assemble to, like, burn through all versions of Goblin in one turn. It was great.
Right. This deck does have Goliath. Did yours have Goliath, Greg?
Yeah, I had Goliath and Giant Man and Power Man, all the big guys.
Right, but with Goliath, he has 4 health, takes 2 consequential on his attacks, and gets that big boost on the turn you decide to attack. So if you can find 1 extra health for him while you're getting your extra activations, you know that's another 5 damage. So something like United We Stand, or he also has team training in this deck, are ways to get that 1 extra health. You know, at least much earlier in the game, would often play Honorary Avenger just to be able to throw that on him to get that 1 extra attack out of him.
Yeah, it looked like he said, he tried to keep it on Red Skull, the first Red Skull, or, you know, phase 2 in Expert, and then, you know, waited until he was all built up just to burn through phase 3, which again is another way to get that face down encounter card sitting on the board at the end of the game, which feels amazing.
Yep. Never deal with Hydra soldiers till you have to.
No one should tell Innsmouth Bear that this is a loophole in his scoring system.
Ha ha ha. So I pose this to you. Jarrett had, are you ready? 29 leadership cards in his deck.
It's amazing.
Is a new award needed?
Well, yeah, like most aspect cards, right? Unless you wanted to have 5 new awards.
No, I think it's just most. I think it's just most aspect cards.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like, you know, like, I don't know, Rainbow Coalition or something about color. We'll workshop it.
Yeah, I had something rainbowy. Yeah, we'll workshop it. But yeah, I think there's something new to pay attention to, because that was 29 is, you know, more cards than of an aspect than people typically add to a deck, period.
Yeah, and he had six basic cards. So yeah, part of that is also just like going as lean on basic as you can.
And does the person who does the 50-card deck always win this? Tristan, how many aspect cards did you have?
Aspect cards? I don't think I had nowhere near as close as he did. it is not 29, I know that. I'm pulling up right now. It was almost... I actually got closer than I thought. I had 25.
Good for you. Good for you. That could win in another round.
Right.
Yeah. Who's going to be the first person to go all 35?
Yeah, to actually 35. Well, and then we're going to have to start making up funny rules like we did for the Astrodar Award, where if the only aspect card you play is a power of, then it counts. It counts only as half an aspect card. So we'll have to give some like double counting for specific types of cards, maybe. Well, you know, really got to workshop this thing.
Well, because the flip side of this too is how few basic cards you put in, and the inverse of the power of art is like, don't put the double resources in, because there's such auto includes for everyone usually.
Yeah. I've been playing a lot of decks where I've not been putting the double resources in lately. Just kind of getting a feel for what that's like. Feel like you got a lot of options. Feels like you can't always do as much as you want. That's the trade-off. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't come, you know, obviously they only come once a deck pulls. So yeah, it's and sometimes you get those awful draws where you just pull all resources and can't do nothing.
Yeah, so one, it's interesting with characters with very small hand sizes, right? It's it's a double-edged sword, right? Because with those characters with very small hand sizes, you do have an even higher chance of having a totally junk hand, especially if you have a bunch of resources. But even, you know, if you end up having to discard a card or two and you don't have any double resources, your chance of being able to play anything in your hand is also often very slim. So yeah, I don't know. I'm feeling it out, but it's been fun to try. I wouldn't try it in Solo Champions League. I'm no fool. In Justice, we had also a new friend of the pod, TJJJ, aka the J. Jonah Jameson, with Follow Fury, which is a deck that had three copies of Followed and three copies of Chance Encounter. So Followed is the one that you put on a side scheme. When it gets defeated, it's 4 damage to the enemy and it costs 1. So it's pretty efficient damage. And then Chance Encounter is one that does similar, but when the side scheme's defeated, you get to go grab a card, an ally from your deck, or discard. So just recycling Fury brings lots of additional thwart and other awesome stuff. So that was a pretty fun deck. This one had, ironically, despite the fact that it had Chance Encounter, it had only 7 allies.
Right.
Yeah. So TJJJ is going to be the proud winner of the Baron Zemo Dancing on His Own Award for fewest allies.
And they were all 3 and 4 cost allies. So they're all like big beefy ones, you know,
right.
He's not really chump blocking with them unless he's got Fury or Pro X, as the Marvel Snap players call him.
Whoa. Is that what they call him?
Professor X. Yes. I mean, sorry, I don't mean to take this as a Marvel Snap podcast, although we can easily do that. But if you are as into YouTube, Marvel Snap YouTube, as I am, it's Pro X. That's what they call
them. Wow. Okay.
Magneto is Magento, and Killmonger is Skillmonger. There's all these different nicknames that all.
Okay. So we should start using them too, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Rogue is Rouge. There's lots of deliberate mispronunciations, but Pro X is by far, what the good professor has.
Beauty. That was TJJJ's deck. He finished at the top of flight 4. He's kind of rising up, because as you accumulate experience, you only have access to flights based on the amount of experience you have and how well you're doing overall. So he's kind of slowly climbing through the ranks and doing quite well overall. Hayabaisa got second coming out of flight 2 and used the same deck, the Follow Fury deck. And then coming out of the training grounds, the top performer in the training grounds, in fact, was Chocobo with I didn't take the best notes on what this one was, but this one had far more non-gray allies than Fall of Fury did, because Fall of Fury had no non-gray allies. And counterintelligence and skilled investigator and kind of all the event package and everything like this. So a deck that looks not entirely unlike what Tristan and I were up to. Right, buddy?
Yeah, it's definitely, it basically looks like the same deck as mine, and but 40 cards instead of 50. I did use the specialized training one, the player side scheme there, though, to, I think they said to get out something very specific to help you deal with the three threat side schemes.
Right. And then, who did I see that actually had Command Center? Oh, it was TJJJ, had Command Center, and so then also so did Hayabusa. Or Hayabusa. Command Center is a card from the Wolverine pack, which is a one-cost support, max one per player. Response, after an ally thwarts and defeats a side scheme, exhaust Command Center, deal two damage to an enemy. So again, if Professor X is, Nick Fury is coming into play almost every single round and finishing off each side scheme, you're going to get Command Center also doing two damage. So Fury, despite putting his efforts into thwarting, is also getting to do his two damage as well, if that's the way you're going. So that's pretty fun. And then finally, we have protection. And at the top is, again, longtime friend of the pod, T. Eberly, who...
Oh, Bears. He's my Lions mate. He's my Lions mate.
Yeah, I know. Longtime buddy of Greg on top of it all. And yeah, he's one of the brave folks, well, in hindsight, maybe we're calling them wise, not brave, who went with one of the improved upgrades, so the improved defense upgrade, and getting those other things, and he just said he didn't even bother dealing with them if they were, unless they were super early or didn't have the resource upgrades out. So basically, if that that lack of hand size really killed your ability to do anything, kind of dealt with it, otherwise just didn't worry about it.
He must have been defending with Capitan because he has that and the armored vest. So he's, you know, defending for four, at least at that point, plus any, you know, event cards he's playing.
Right. And hard to ignore to keep help keep the main scheme under control. Electrostatic armor and energy barrier to deal with those toughs on the things like we were talking about. So, you know, lots of nice little things, really thinking about the matchup that was happening and how to tune the deck for it. And then Dijoso used actually the same deck as T. Eberly. So interesting, we had Injustice and Protection. The second place player played the same deck as the first place player and got second. So those probably were just great decks in the end for the matchup. And then third, coming out of Flight 2, was Pack Attack CB with a 10.7 glacial, 10.7 turn average. I thought I was in for the long haul when I went 11 turns. And so Pack Attack CV did that almost every single game and gets the Pietro Maximov Irony Award for slowest top performing deck.
I can't say I was probably that much faster than that. So, the only difference is that he is a top three deck and I was not. So I may have had been running for this one if had I actually cracked the lead.
Oh, Greg, you gotta get your ducks in a row.
I've never won an award, but I know you have to be in the top three to get one. I still haven't done the trick of putting one, again, not even, yeah, maybe just a power off card. I'll go all basic with one power off card. That's the dream. I haven't figured that out yet.
In one of those ones where you think there's an aspect that will actually do better than basic.
Right, right. Or as good, yeah.
And then as mentioned, we had one person do basic. They ended up winning one out of three other games coming out of Flight 3, the Blaze 241. Let's go through some of the awards we didn't have a chance to check in. So my favorite one, because we always get to talk about it, is the Rocket Raccoon Tinkering Award for the most clever tech. I really like the Command Center that TJJJ put in his deck. I also like, just the last two decks we were discussing, T. Eberly's one with electrostatic armor and energy barrier to deal with all the toughs. I thought those were both really well-suited for this matchup. Was there anything, Tristan, that you spotted in any of the decks that we were looking at that maybe should also get a shout out here?
It's still the same deck, but I really like the whole let's bring Nick Fury in as many times as we possibly can in a deck.
Right.
As you're thwarting all those side schemes pretty easily with a Justice deck, and then you're getting to recur Nick Fury a bunch of times and just drawing a bunch of cards, or being running a bunch of threat or doing a bunch of damage, and also having a blocker for the turn. That's kind of the one that stood out for me.
Well, in that case, a 50-card deck's probably not even helping you avoid that encounter card. If you're getting that many Furies, you're going to draw so much, right?
Yeah. Yes. That is.
I think that's really fun. I think it was a nice combo, and again, it really went well with Command Center and getting that extra 2 damage out of Fury on top of the thwarting. So that's pretty clever. Greg, anything you spotted that we didn't mention?
No, I think we covered it all. It did remind me though that a lot of those 7 cost upgrades were affordable this round from the Galaxy's Most Wanted, the marketplace. And there's that one that I think you just like could draw up your entire hand size again. So
yep.
It's interesting that most people looked like they went with the sort of steady eddy, you know, upgrades that stay out and, you know, give that persistent either damage or thwart. And none of them went for those sort of big swings where it's just like, you know, I'm going to have 15 cards in this hand or something crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. Did either of you grab that one at all during this season?
No. I often will play with it if I have that kind of access to it. But yeah, especially this round, Thort was so hard to get as a leadership player for me.
Yeah, Tristan, did you?
No, I didn't go with that one. I think the only one I would have gone with it for is when I tried to get a Nova deck going as fast as humanly possible, which I got close, but not as close as everybody else in the league. That would have been fun to try with that one, but I don't think I had enough units for it at the time because I was at a round 2-1 or something.
Yeah, Nova was round 2. That's right. I think I did it for yeah, I did. I had exactly 7 units for round 3, which was our Spider Woman Magog one, and I took the Grand Strategy one, the one that Greg was just talking about. So that's you play it to draw up to your hand size. Hero action only though, and then you have to remove it from the game. Tristan, so in the end, what do you think? What was your favorite tech? You like the just kind of the overall synergy from TJJJ's deck?
Yeah, I think so. I think just he had so many unique things with it that that's the one I would go with is the Fury, yeah. And you have the with a chance encounter, and then you have the Command Center to just keep doing the extra damage with Nick Fury. I really like that one.
Right. Love it. Greg?
I think that's really fun. I mean, I will always vote for my bear mate, Alliance. but yes, if I have to vote, is this like a Golden Globes thing where I have to like get paid under the table to vote something? What's going on here?
You only have to be. I think you have to be taken out for very, very extravagant meals.
Great. As long as someone's picking up the check, I'll vote wherever you want me to.
Yeah, I think I was really excited to see the inclusion of Command Center as a card that actually made a ton of sense in the matchup. It's one of those ones that's usually just a little too situational, but it, you know, works really well here. So I think I'll go for that one as well. So way to go, TJJJ. Yeah,
it's essentially yeah, like the soldier card. I'm already leader mission leader. You know, same kind of deal, right? It's like anything that you get a persistent thing for clearing side schemes is just a perfect matchup.
Right. Despite your gaffe, Greg, mission leader was a no-brainer.
It was a no-brainer if you had a brain, yeah.
But I could think of some Justice players that did not choose Command Center.
I think we have 2 of them on the podcast, don't we?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we do.
We all just whiffed on the obvious card.
Okay, well, yeah, we can look at it that way. And the winner of the Curtis James Jackson III, a.k.a. 50 Cent Award for placing with a 50-card deck, that was Jarrett's leadership deck with honorable mention to Dristan, who didn't rank on the podium, but certainly had 50 cards.
It's always a tough battle for this one.
The party at the Triskelion Award for most allies, Kakita, Jamie, and Jarrett both had 13. You didn't quite have 13, right, Greg?
I don't think so. No, I was maybe maybe a 12, 11, somewhere in there.
Right. And then, as mentioned, Chocobo coming out of Training Grounds was the New Mutant Award for top score in the Training Grounds. So that kind of rounds out the awards we didn't have a chance to talk about. Any parting thoughts, Tristan?
It was fun. I enjoyed doing my very, very first podcast ever.
Yay!
I'm excited to see what we have for next season. I can't wait to see when we're all forced to play the pool aspect. who,
yes,
what heroes we get dealt with right. that, and see what kind of, then we'll really test the, what is it, the Skrull Infiltrator and the Agent of Shield, and we'll really test that, how high we can get with those scores.
That's really funny. Yeah, well, Innsmouth Bear promised that this next season pool will be available, but never required.
One day.
In future seasons, that may no longer be the case. How about you, Greg? Parting thoughts?
Well, it's funny because I think, Dristan, when you talked about Shadows of the Past, it reminded me, because I don't think we've talked about this on this podcast, but you know, they announced the next Age of Apocalypse box. But the coolest thing out of that box, I think, is this standard 3 set, where it's going to basically mitigate some of the swinginess of Shadows of the Past, but also almost always, I think you'll probably almost always see your you know, what do you call it? The
Nemesis minion.
Nemesis minion, thanks. Yeah, like, because it basically puts an environment out there where when the standard cards come out, it puts another counter on, and when you get 3 counters, and it basically becomes Shadows of the Past comes out. So it, like, guarantees you're not going to get it in the first few turns, but also kind of guarantees that if you go, you know, 7-8 turns, you're always going to see it, you know. So it's pretty intriguing, because they also claim that it's the same difficulty as standard 1. You know, we saw standard 2 was insanely hard compared to 1. So I would, when that finally comes out, how that gets worked into SCL is going to be really interesting.
I suspect it's probably a small bump in difficulty, not the same, but it won't feel like the big jump to standard 2.
Right. The swinginess will be also mitigated a bit. You know, you're not going to have a turn 1 shadows turn. Right. You know.
Right. Justin, what's your take on the standard 3 so far?
I like it a lot better than obviously everybody for standard 2. I think it'll fit much better in the solo champions league. It'll give us kind of a countdown timer for when we're going to see shadows, and maybe that'll give us some cooler interactions, because definitely depending on who your nemesis minion is really changes the game. Like there are some really bad ones out there. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think Groot's nemesis minion is pretty bad. Cap's about too bad, but
yeah, it is an initial design shortcoming of this game, is that the nemesis set kind of doesn't have as much presence in the game as it feels like it really should. So this standard 3 seems like a way to really make it so that nemesis set has some actual presence.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's super cool because and it's also really fun thematically too. To like it's that moment of the battle when you know you think you have the upper hand and then another combatant enters. You know, it's just out of your head cannon.
Well, personally, it also does a thing is that Zola is my favorite villain in the game still. I mean, probably neck and neck with Magog these days actually, because I absolutely adore Magog, but that slow trickle of knowing that a thing's coming and being able to see it coming that Zola has with those extra minions popping out of his gooey vats. It looks like standard 3 is going to do a similar thing. And so I actually think I'll probably really like that.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. I think.
Yeah. It seems like they've actually taken some time to think about how they want to integrate this. I think the last time they really thought about nemesis minions with anything would have been Kang. And that's been a long time ago. So it's nice to see them go back to try and like incorporate that a little bit more into the game.
Right. Yeah, agreed. Well, Tristan, thank you so much for coming and joining us. It was really great to get to chat with you.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite. It was really fun. It's definitely something anytime you need somebody, reach out. If it can fit into my schedule, I'll definitely try and jump on with you guys. It was fun.
Amazing. Well, we'll put you on the carousel.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. And Greg, as always, thank you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Super fun.
Always a pleasure. And listeners, thank you for tuning in to The Road to Nowhere.